This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello, and welcome to Pulling the Music Apart. I'm Dave. Today, I'm delighted to have Nolia, Russell, and our good friend Savas join me. As our name suggests, we're here to explore and analyze music. On this podcast, we're going to talk about 70s music. Wow, what a decade. We'll start with you, Nolia, you know, ladies before gentlemen.
All right. Well, I'm not just saying this because 1973 might have been when I was born.
Oh, really? You don't look it.
Right. Oh, yeah, I think everyone listening would agree.
So, oh, yes.
yeah, so this is a huge, huge important era in music because it stands for, you know, the transition of what we've been used to in the 60s to words that come to mind for the 70s are innovation, diversity, change. I mean, there are so many things going on. We're, you know, it's at the beginning of the end of a really harsh political era in time. The flower power time is gone. We have now got some of the biggest bands that influence music to this day from the 70s.
Went out with a bang, so to speak, in 1969 with the Woodstock concert. So do you think that hailed the end of the 60s flower power era, that concert? Well, obviously it was towards the end of 1969.
I think so. By this time, women also were able to show themselves as musician and not just backup singer or things like that. The 70s allowed women to kind of really showcase what they could do. They weren't in the kitchen anymore like the 50s and 60s, and they had something to prove. And I think because they'd already gone through the whole burning bras era and that sort of thing, we had women coming into rock and absolutely killing it and bringing a sensuality to music that we've never had before.
So, Savas, what do you think signified that the start of the 70s sound?
Right, 24-track recording. If you listen to the Beatles or even Jimi Hendrix, let's talk about an album called Axis Bold as Love. It was recorded on 4 tracks. So what they would do would be once they filled up the 4 tracks, they would dump it onto one and they would have another 3 more again, then keep dumping and dumping and dumping. But suddenly you've got 24 tracks individually and you have this thing called automation where you can program a desk to automate sounds to go louder and softer. So it was a whole new bigger canvas for bands to work on. So they would do a live take and a whole bunch of overdubs.
So to break that down, is that having one track or for one instrument, maybe?
Exactly, yeah.
A flute or a cymbal?
Correct.
Or,
so you could manipulate just that one track, and that you record it in an isolation booth, so it's just totally clean, that sound, and you could add whatever you wanted to it, a whole bunch of different flavours.
So there's a lot of layering of sounds
a lot
in
of
the
layering.
70s.
Queen, you know, like Bohemian Rhapsody, my God.
Well, a question for you again on the technical side of things. So we all know the wall of sound, okay, which is a concept I think that was at its genesis back in the Beatles time with
Phil Spector.
Phil Spector. Is that a similar concept or not?
Exactly. So what he would do, Phil Spector, he would record a band and then dump it onto another track and keep dumping it and dumping it and dumping it. So he created a wall of sound.
Mm.
But now we can do that with basic compressors. We don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
But at the time it was revolutionary.
Labor intensive too.
Yeah, of course. And you could easily make a mistake and ruin it.
So enough about the technical side of it. I mean, everyone's got an idea of what their 70s sound is.
Mm.
I mean, it's 10 years. Is there an artist or a band that in your mind says, yeah, that's the 70s? As opposed to not sounding like the 60s, it's not a folks sound or flower power influence. It's just, that's 1970. It doesn't sound like 1980. It doesn't sound like 1960. What songs, what artists come to mind?
Well, I'm going to keep it Australian, I'm going to say Skyhooks.
Yeah.
They defined it with an album called Living in the 70s. Yeah. How 70s can you get? They sang about topics that were important in the 70s. They dressed in 70s fashion. They had the glam makeup on. They had the 70s swagger and attitude. And in Australia, they were definitely the epitome of what the 70s were.
So guys that have tuned in listening that aren't from Australia, which is probably most of you, check out Skyhooks. It's from where we sit, it's a definitive Aussie sound, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cheeky lyrics, tight outfit.
Amazing.
And 100% 70s. So you're starting with an Aussie act. How about you, David? What to you says, yeah, this is the 70s?
Okay, well, geez, it's hard to just narrow it down to which artist or which band. I'll give an example here, what changed from the 60s to the 70s. So, okay, so that period was the summer of love was over and things changed.
Yep.
Now, I'll look at like an artist who was able to transform from the 60s to the 70s with a new sound. Rod Argent from The Zombies. Now, they were a 60s band with very 60s sounding hits. So they disbanded. Then he formed his own band called Argent. He used a lot of imagination there. And I think of the song Hold Your Head Up. It was a big hit, right, in 1971.
Great,
I think,
song.
And it just reeked of the 70s. It didn't have any 60s sound about it. And I thought, wow, now there's somebody who actually changed the sound from one decade to another.
Actually, that's you made me think now. Another band that reinvented itself and they've gone for all money. A 60s band, another Aussie-ish. We weren't born here, but they certainly started their success here with the Bee Gees. Now, the Bee Gees were famous for ballad-style music in the 60s. And in 1976, 1977, a movie called Saturday Night Fever came out. And we got this, I know disco's been around for a few years at this point, but definitively disco. And to me, definitively 1970s.
Yeah.
The Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, platinum?
Oh, it would be multi. And that whole album is just 70s. And I think those boys, the Bee Gees, I think they wrote just about every song on it by every different artist as well.
And changed their style to falsetto. So they really reinvented themselves, didn't they?
Didn't they? What? Yeah.
With that disco backbeat.
On that album, I know they started to introduce loops. Do you think there was drum machines on that album? It was all real musicians.
I thought you were going to ask drugs for a second.
Yeah. No, probably that as well. But yeah, not introduced yet. It was real musicians on that album, probably.
That's... I'd say so. I don't know when the programmable drums really kicked off or came into its own. I don't know when that happened.
Mm-hmm. And I think just came to mind now, I think one of the reasons that music was such a big thing in the 70s, stereo systems were now accessible. Yet Japanese companies like Akai, TIAC, Panasonic and so forth, Pioneer, that were making reasonably priced hi-fi and record players that people could have in their own homes and listen to really good music. People enjoyed playing records at home, at parties, for all occasions.
That's a good point. And music also became portable. because the compact
Correct.
Cassette.
Yeah.
Kids may not even know what that is. I think some kids wouldn't even know what a CD is.
Yeah.
So you had this little, very compact, you could carry it around and listen to it if you're out at a picnic or camping. So music went where you went.
Yeah, you couldn't do that with an 8-track cartridge tape player, could you?
Or a record player.
Yeah. Right.
I think we saw quite a few genres introduced in the 70s that we hadn't really seen before. I know music comes from somewhere and it morphs into what we know as 70s music, but disco was the 70s.
Mm.
Glam rock was the 70s.
Mm.
Metal, really?
Yeah, that's where it began.
70s.
Yeah. I just think it allowed musicians to be more expressive, genuine, and show the creativity like they've never been able to before. Because if you think back to the 60s of bands like the Easy Beats, even the Rolling Stones at the start, the Beatles, the Kinks, they all kind of dressed the same, had the same kind of haircuts, had the same kind of setup when they were performing. Whereas now you've got the 70s, you've got the diversity, you've got bands like Led Zeppelin as well, even though they started late 60s, like they were very big in the 70s. Fleetwood Mac, I mean, that's when you see women coming into the scene and really taking over. And one thing I noticed Stevie Nicks dislikes about some music now is that women are sort of objectifying themselves in a sexual way in order to sell music, or they're being told to. And she just said, you don't need to do that. Obviously, you can do that in your own songwriting and in your own presentation in your own way to be sensual, to be sexy. And that, to me, is the 70s. Like, you look at all the women in disco in the 70s. How feminine were they? They were always glamorous looking. Men were dressed in the open neck shirts and there are a few gold chains happening.
It was a more visual time too, because we were starting to have video clips of these songs. And getting back to what you were saying about female artists, I mean, Suzy Quatro, Suzy Q, Massive, glam rock, Heart, Helen Reddy.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Who is an Aussie artist, but I mean, she became huge internationally and she had a message about feminism.
That's right.
And it worked and it sold. Stands the test of time.
It does.
And also TV with bands like The Carpenters. Partridge Family, was that
true?
Yeah, 70s,
yeah.
The Bay City Rollers.
When was colour introduced to TV?
Oh, in Australia, it was 1974.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you go, because then we could actually see, like you said before, that visual side.
We were a long time behind the rest of the world with that one, though.
Yeah. But like David Bowie, for example, like his artistry came through in his appearance, not just his music. There are just so many excellent bands. Like, think about Talking Heads, very different band to what we've been just talking about before. But just to name a few, if we think about 70s bands, we've got the Eagles. Now, the Eagles can sometimes even sound a little bit country.
Yes.
Oh, they definitely do, yeah.
Yeah, they can. And
you can't, it's one of those artists that or groups that you can't really pigeonhole, say that they're pop or they're rock or they're country.
But any of these modern day country artists now, you could picture any of them singing any of their songs.
Mm.
You know, you can't hide your lion eyes in your smiles in disguise. You could just picture that, can't you? Just about any one of their songs. Another band from the 70s, we've got Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Mm.
Huge. Pink Floyd. Dire Straits.
There you go, Pink Floyd, another 60s band who reinvented themselves in the 70s.
Yep. Also Blondie. I think that's why, you know, and Queen. All of these artists are so different.
And then look at the ex-members of the Beatles who went on to have their own stellar solo careers. And the obvious one with the biggest body of work would be Paul McCartney. And that's probably because he's obviously survived the other members, with the exception of Ringo, who didn't have a big body of work. And that was a new style of music for them.
Mm.
You know, they're traditionally a 60s rock pop band who were initially just a Chuck Berry cover band, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. The very early days, yeah.
Covering Chuck Berry. So, yeah, 70s sound. And you've got to admire these artists that were able to go and actually reinvent themselves. We saw the same thing with the Rolling Stones. A classic example of that is them doing a song with a disco backbeat, you know, in Miss You.
I think that in the 70s, there wasn't a book written of what music should be. And all these bands that you mentioned, Norlia, wrote a chapter in the book, like Queen and The Who and Pink Floyd. They defined what music should be.
That's right. And there's no one-size-fits-all approach. That's why it's so successful. And I think that's why the Beatles were the best as well, because other people were trying to copy them.
Mm.
And they just in every single way. But nobody would have that same success because the Beatles were the Beatles.
Yeah, true.
They were themselves. But then you think about other artists like Simon and Garfunkel. Now, they were going from early 60s right up until about 2010. They were able to evolve with the times. Paul Simon, I'll never forget, in the 80s. I thought, oh, wow. Was that when he sang...
Diamonds on the Soles of My Shoes, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Graceland was the album.
Yeah, that's right. Recording that Graceland album, that was amazing.
Using African musicians.
Mm. Now think about throwing The Clash into the 70s.
Yes.
You got another sound all over it.
Well, there's another style altogether.
That's it.
Basically, the 70s, how can I say, maybe the 50s and 60s was the genesis. The 70s was, you know, the next... three books and it was so good that there was maybe only a couple of books left for the 80s and 90s. And since then, it's just been a reproduction.
Well, it was all there to invent at the time because there were styles we haven't heard before and mixing genres, mixing jazz with rock.
Mm?
Yep. And I think that was
funk with pop, you know.
I think that's because we were able to, with the change in technology, all of a sudden there's a world of possibilities.
But people are more open-minded and all that. They wanted something new, something fresh, because, you know, there were radio stations all over the world playing music nonstop that needed new music.
Mm.
And people suddenly had their portable cassette players, record stores were everywhere. So there was a demand for product, but there isn't that demand now.
Yeah, and Russell, you mentioned the fusion, how that happened in the 70s. Now, that just brings me straight to Steely Dan.
Mm.
Now, Steely Dan was a band who was able to sell jazz music to kids. Wasn't called jazz, because if you said to a kid, hey, check out this jazz band, it would never sell.
Mm.
Mm.
But they were actually selling jazz music. It really was, wasn't it?
Absolutely. 5/4 beats.
I can think of another genre. Yacht rock started in the 70s. Thinking of bands like Chicago.
And the Doobie Brothers started it. Yeah. What a Fool Believes.
And then the other part of the 70s I love is that people were introducing their poetic style to their lyric writing. So it wasn't just what you see is what you get. You've got lyrics that have hidden meaning.
Not just rhyming lyrics.
That's right.
But you were getting the cheeky, creative stuff.
And if I think of one of the first poetic writers, I think of Jim Morrison. And so the abstract, I think, was brought into 70s songwriting itself. And I mean, even if you listen to Stevie Nicks, a lot of her lyrics, there's a lot of metaphors being used in a lot of the lyrical content. I think that also created a lot of curiosity and people started actually researching these things. Oh, what does that song mean? So I think it sort of gave birth to true creativity.
I've got a question for either David or Russell. Why do you think the 80s rejected the 70s so much and resented it? Like when the 80s began, the 70s was just so passé and so daggy in a way, and it was totally rejected and something new was created, whereas the 70s was a little bit of an extension of the 60s, but then the 80s was just like...
It was more hard edge in the 70s, I agree with you. And it could be because of the video clips. I mean, the 1980s, but it's about the big hair, the typical 80s styles. Did that overshadow some of the music at times?
It did, because people would think, I can just, you know, grow my hair long. I can be in a heavy metal band.
So potentially the band could have had some mediocrity about it, but... Oh, they had this stage presence, which is cute
or
funny.
There are quite a few bands from that era that were just a bit wishy-washy, but they had the image. What I think has happened in the 70s and the 80s is that as an art itself, fashion crossed over into the actual musicality because it became more about images as well.
I think you're right. I'll crank out an example here. So look at a band such as ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, the brainchild of Jeff Lynne, who himself is not just a writer, multi-instrumentalist, but he's a producer in his own right. He's produced many acts.
Travelling Wilburys,
George Harrison, Roy Orbison. He had this fusion thing happening too, didn't he? Because it was pop rock music with symphony orchestras and string sections. And that's quite a new sound, really. I know it's been done before, not to that extent. And the music was clever. Lyrics were, I reckon, some of the best ever.
Right.
With ELO. And you're right. We didn't really see that level of creativity consistently in the 1980s.
Mm.
It was there for sure, but not to that level. These were geniuses, masters.
Yeah, but in the 70s, yeah, there was the creativity. And Nolly, you're talking about how fashion found its way into the music now and statements. Now, I can think of a band straight away from the 70s where I'm thinking it's a statement. We are blokes, we are men's men, and we're bringing our fashion into it as well. The Village People. You know, you got a policeman, a construction worker.
Exactly. You know, it's funny if you think about it, right?
A motorbike man. We're blokes, okay? Yeah.
Why was the Indian in there?
Oh, maybe
he looked cool.
What about for diversity? What about for standing up for diversity?
Maybe that's what it was.
Well,
yeah.
It was, they didn't want to leave anyone out.
Right.
Okay, and
they could have had an ambo though, couldn't they?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Or a fireman.
Yeah.
The other part to do with the fashion was that wigs were heavily introduced in the 70s. Yeah. So it didn't even matter if you didn't have the hair, you could
buy it,
which people do now more than ever. But, but you know, Dolly Parton, for example, she was big on the wigs.
Did she have wigs?
Yeah.
Gloria Gaynor, was that her hair, that big giant thing on top of her head or what?
I think that may have been natural. But I don't know. Looks I don't like want to speak a wombat, for all women.
Yeah.
What about Tina Turner? She wore wigs. So she said it was a wig. It was quite interesting to see how fashion played such a big part in that. I think, like I said before, with the 60s, it was kind of like a stock standard, what a rock and roll artist looks like. Whereas now you've got the 70s, you can be anything you want to be. You can be a man dressing like a woman or a woman dressing like a man.
So do you think the 70s was some artists who their start in the 60s grew up, they matured?
I just think as an artist, constantly evolving, and if you want to last in the business, you've got to be able to constantly evolve and keep up with the times. And I think a lot of these artists are still well known and still going because they're willing to evolve with the time.
Well, you mentioned Tina Turner.
Yeah.
And that's a classic example because her and Ike were an amazing outfit in the 60s, River Deep, Mountain High.
Yeah.
Stellar song.
Mm.
And then in the 70s, still with Ike, we had Nutpuss. It's a huge song.
Yeah.
Right.
And definitively disco.
Absolutely.
And then, moving into the 80s, I mean, I think that was their most successful period. What's the Private Dancer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That was a huge comeback album.
Huge album.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was about 40, I think, when we did the episode when she released that album.
I think she was almost like, I think she's a grandma when she released the album or close to it.
So I was going to say that the 70s were really fun, you know, with glam and so forth, but it was quite serious as well with progressive rock, with bands like Yes, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Would you put ELO in the progressive catalogue?
Oh, I would, definitely.
Cool.
Well, they did a lot of experimental things within their music.
With symphony orchestras.
King Crimson, very experimental.
And then so was Pink Floyd. I mean,
yes,
there's nobody like Pink Floyd.
Nobody, no.
Still, to be able to create music that would invite the masses to their concerts and at the same time be so ambient. They really mixed a lot of different sounds into their music.
ELO brought something brand new to the stage, and I was lucky enough to see them in 1977 in Melbourne at the Music Bowl. There's a laser show. Oh, I didn't even know what a laser was.
What year was that?
76, 77. Yeah, so here I am seeing this, to me, an amazing light show with lasers, albeit prehistoric versions of what we know today.
Mm.
Huge stage present. And if you're a performing artist these days, if you don't have a set that reeks of colour and movement, you haven't got a show, almost exclusively. Mm. I'm not talking about little one-on-one performances with someone in a tiny venue, but you're performing at a major arena, you've got to have something else going on apart from the band singing.
And that was the other thing, so we've discussed how fashion has influenced it, but when it came to concerts, the experimentation started then because Pink Floyd started to experiment with light and refraction and all this kind of stuff in their actual shows. So people could feel like, oh, there's light on my hand. I'm part of this. How trippy. This is like in the 70s, another area, another genre is a psychedelic music. So can you think of any other bands that had a psychedelic sound to it from the 70s? Because that's like another genre.
I'm going to give you one. I mentioned it in a past episode. They're called Hawkwind. They were considered...
Sounds gassy.
Hawkwind. Lemmy from Motorhead was in the band. He was the bass player. And they had a very big hit with Silver Machine 1972. The genre was considered acid rock. Psychedelic rock.
That was 70s.
70s, yeah.
Okay.
And they would have strobes at their concerts and people would be off their dial.
Yeah. So it was an immersive experience. You were now starting to appeal to people's senses as well. You know, this is how it becomes a whole vibe, doesn't it? I think, you know, I've spoken to Savas before about bands and why are some bands really, really so iconic and everything like that. And he's, you know, we've had this discussion many times when you said it's always been about the vibe of a band.
Mm.
The vibe of a band may have even created in that time too. Like you had a vibe about you.
Mm.
You had an image. So another genre just came to mind. Heavy metal became a thing in the 70s.
Absolutely.
Aside from Black Sabbath, what are some 70s heavy metal bands?
Motorhead.
Judas Priest.
Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden began in the 70s.
Quiet Riot. Only probably just make it in there, but
just, yeah. The end of the 70s, yeah.
And you had bands who, such as Status Quo.
Right.
Who had a very similar style to AC/DC.
Mm.
That 12-bar sound was massive in the 70s.
Mm. Great band. They're so fun.
I know we've spoken about the introduction as well of punk and, you know, anti-establishment music, which is, you know, if you think about that, you can picture a punk person with a mohawk and everything. So that's another statement. But just going to throw another one out there. Soul music.
Yeah.
James Brown, I feel good.
That's funk, right?
Soul as well.
Okay.
I would say soul, funk, soul/funk.
Isaac Hayes, Shaft.
Yeah. Funk. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's funk, that's soul, that's disco all at the one time.
Right. Yeah, it's under one umbrella, right?
Yeah, and then you think about, Prince.
Prince more 80s though, would you think?
His first album, I think we looked it up last time we did the episode, wasn't it 78?
78, yeah.
Well, he was definitely making music in the 70s.
Yeah.
Because he was obviously a prodigy and already knew exactly who he was. Another one of those people that is or was unapologetically himself. And I think it's what sort of like the Lady Gagas of today are also being like. Mm. It's like, I know she is heavily influenced from prior musicians who were unapologetically themselves. Like she wants to go out and wear it.
Openly.
Yeah, but if she wants to wear 100 Kermit the Frog faces as a dress, she'll go and do it. Like, she is that kind of person. I think sometimes maybe she should have been around in the 70s because she's such an individual and so talented as well.
Is Off the Wall 79? Was
it? Yep, 79. Okay,
there we go. Yeah. My God, there was a lot
Michael
of good music.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, even the Commodores.
Yeah.
Which birthed, you know, Lionel Richie's solo career, which and I don't think that started
that
until the
80s. Style too. If you look at Three Times a Lady, which is a beautiful soft ballad, and then stuff like Easy, like Sunday Morning.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's really getting into your, I suppose, your funk soul type stuff. I think that, do you think the 70s did more for funk soul disco than any other era?
I think it did it for everything. I mean, it even put Latin rock into the forefront.
Isn't
with Santana.
Yeah.
It was an era of anything goes. Give us something new. Give us something unusual.
Well, there was even, a monster folk music album from 1972.
There you go.
Neil Young Harvest.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And you had Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Hugely successful. And then to throw another band into the mix, which I was a bit obsessed with for a little while, was The Who.
Who are you?
But like, what genre are they? What genre are they then?
What's progressive?
Some very well-known songs.
They were commercial. I mean, they had hooks and verses and choruses. They had their own sound, but they weren't doing something like a band like New, N-E-U, with an apostrophe. They had a white album and it was spray canned on. They were from Germany and they were what we call avant-garde. Anything went in the 70s.
Oh, look, exactly.
But two male artists that come to mind, and I think most of their creativity we saw in the 70s, one's Elton, 1971, And then 1973 with the Yellow Brick Road.
Right. So I've got to.
And so, beyond. And I was also going to say Billy Joel.
Yellow Brick Road, double album, right?
Yes.
Was the double album and the triple album a 70s thing, or was that around in the 60s too?
I reckon it was mainly the 70s, wasn't it?
It feels like the 70s.
I think, yeah, the double album thing was big. It was a giant thing of the 70s.
Yeah.
And one band who was supposed to have a double album, because they were huge through the 70s, it only turned out to be a single album because they just couldn't come up with anything. The Eagles.
Right.
The Long Run. It was supposed to be a double album. The reason The Long Run was titled as such, because it was taking so long. I think it took 3 years to make this album. And then at the end of it all, I think they had a time frame in which they had to release this one. You know, you don't have enough songs. Just release this bad boy now. And so there you go. There's the double album, which never happened.
79?
79, yeah.
Yep.
Apart from Yellow Brick Road, any famous double albums that were studio albums, not live?
I was just thinking that. What comes to mind? This is 60s, the White Album by the Beatles.
Double album,
that's the
correct.
First time I actually remember seeing a double album.
And was coloured vinyl the 70s thing?
Late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
It would have been.
It was definitely in the 70s.
Actually, I remember it. Rod Stewart, Do You Think I'm Sexy? I had the colour vinyl 12-inch.
What colour was it?
It was red.
Oh, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
The single, Rolling Stones Brown Sugar, in the shape of a sugar bag.
Right.
It wasn't your regular round 7-inch record.
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing. Album art in the 70s.
Mm. Yeah.
That just comes back into the whole artistic representation and image of a band.
It's something you can't get on Spotify.
Famous double albums of the 70s. I'm really interested. I can't think of any except for Elton John. A Quadrophenia by The Who, your band, Nolia, was a double album.
Physical Graffiti, Led Zeppelin. And by the way, that was an interactive album. It had little windows that opened on the album cover.
And Just Made It, Layla, and other assorted love songs by Derek and the Dominoes.
And Pink Floyd, The Wall.
It was a double album.
Yes.
That's right, it was too.
79. Well, I thought it was 1980. Exile on Main Street.
Rolling Stones,
yes. All Things Must Pass, George Harrison.
Yes.
A double album.
Concert Bangladesh.
Yeah.
George Harrison.
Yeah. Was actually a triple.
Triple?
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, yeah. And there's like there's about 5 minutes of them just meditating.
Oh.
There's just silence on the recorder.
You skipped that track.
Yeah.
one concept of which happened in the 70s, not a double album, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon on vinyl. It was recorded in quadraphonic. Nobody could afford a quadraphonic system at the time, but it actually was recorded in quadraphonic.
Things that never took off.
Yes, right.
Can I mention another aspect of 70s music was the introduction of that lyrical content, which was pretty much sexually explicit. I just want to see, because were you doing DJ work? Were you spinning tunes in the 70s?
Yes.
Can you think of...
I think I can. Broken English.
Song. What was the song?
I'm not too sure. That was Marian Faithfull. I think she may have been with Mick Jagger in those days, but the album cover came with a warning. This contains explicit lyrics.
Well, if it wasn't mentioned, it was definitely in there. So,
you've been innuendo?
Innuendo. Diana Ross.
Yeah.
Upside down, boy, you turn me inside out, round, round, written about Gene Simmons.
Who was her lover at the time.
Yes, and it was referring to Gene Simmons / fellatio.
Go on.
Shall I say no more?
Speaking of that, I heard a rumor that when Donna Summers was recording
To Love You, Baby,
actually having sex.
Okay, no. I don't know if that is. Yeah, that sounds more like a rumor, but she was making the sounds. Yeah,
she was. Please tell me she was.
She was making the sounds and
the orgasmic sounds.
Yeah, and that was what it was for. That was the other thing. She was singing about sexual pleasure, but that was another way of women being empowered in that time frame as well.
Good point.
You know, we're out of the kitchen now, but we also want to sing about things that are important to us, you know, and these things might actually be important. But if you think, oh, this is so inappropriate, really, but I guess because I had a record player in my room and I was already obsessed with music and I had you guys around me giving me records all the time. I don't know how old I was, but I remember listening to Sexual Healing a little bit too much for a kid.
Oh, well, that was the 80s, but yeah.
But that was early 80s.
Yeah.
Prior to
that. Just lyrics that you didn't know the meaning of, to be fair.
Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye. I'm pretty sure he wasn't talking about making breakfast.
Well, T-Rex did a song in the 70s called Get It On as well.
They did.
Yeah.
Bang a gong.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. Let's make love tonight.
Also, Lou Reed. Can you think of the song?
Take a Walk on the Wild Side.
That's right.
Well, that was just about a gentleman who dressed up in ladies' clothes, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was talking about unconventional relationships.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was groundbreaking. 73.
Yeah. That was huge.
And that was actually bold to sing, have those lyrics. Album title, Transformer. Produced by.
Oh, hello, yeah.
David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Too.
There you go.
David Bowie's saxophone teacher did the sax solo at the end of Walk on the Wild Side.
Did you know about?
Vicious. It's a like a great song.
Yeah, yeah.
You Keep Me Hanging On. You Keep Me Hanging On.
Isaac Hayes, Shaft.
Cool. Yeah. The theme from Shaft.
Yeah. Can't Get Enough of Your Love. What was his name?
Was that Bad Company?
Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Baby.
Oh,
is that Bill Withers?
Was that Barry White?
Barry White.
Yes. That's right.
Everyone's a winner. Hot chocolate.
Apparently, lots of children conceived while they're listening to Barry White songs.
That's why there's so many Barrys in the world.
I think that the 70s, you can say, introduced total freedom when it came to creativity.
Yeah.
Question without notice. No particular order. Three songs that just reeks of, this is the 70s.
Oh, I'll start. Hot Chocolate, Everyone's a Winner.
Good one.
The Pina Colada song.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Hell yeah.
By?
Ribbit Hines.
Ribbit Holmes.
Ribbit Holmes. That would be number two. And the third one would have to definitely be an ABBA song like Mamma Mia.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
So 70s, my God.
Obvious one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything by ABBA.
What about your three?
Oh, my three songs? Sultans of Swing, Dire Straits.
Oh, yeah.
This is good. I asked the question. Now I've got to come up with the answer. Chain by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Chains.
Are you correcting me because we corrected you earlier?
No, I don't hold on to those things.
I don't roll that way.
Well, The Chain anyway. But
allegedly.
And, Emotional Rescue, right. Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
That was late 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was 70s.
Is that okay? Yeah, that's a fantastic song. Yeah, wow.
So there's three?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, I'll think of three songs which reek of the 70s. Meatloaf, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, I hate you. It's so obvious.
Yeah, but you didn't say it. Feel Like Making Love, Bad Company. It's got 70s written all over it. And another one would have to be The Village People, Macho Man.
Oh, I love that.
Because we're all macho men.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Especially around here.
I know we touched on that earlier, Village People. Wasn't that such an important time?
Right.
It was the absolute tail end of disco because there was a big pushback against disco with conventional rock and roll bands. They hated the disco.
And punk bands certainly hated it.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, 77 Village People hit the...
Yeah, I think it was 77.
Hit the charts.
Certainly going in 78, yeah.
But it was all over by 1980.
Well, Bill O'Coin was the manager of the Village People, Kiss, Donna Summers.
What?
Is it Summer?
Summers.
Donna Summer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the...
And she's looking in the mirror, it's Donna Summer.
Yeah, there's only one of them. Nolia.
More Than a Feeling by Boston.
Beautiful.
That's super duper 70s to me.
Wow.
Great production, that one.
You stole my Chain song, so I'm just going to pick a different one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Dreams by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's got that really cool bass sound at the start that just,
the swirling electric guitars.
Yeah, and I can just picture her swirling around on the stage in that witchy gypsy dress. Le Freak.
Oh, yeah.
What a great choice.
Yeah.
That's really 70s.
Yeah, so I'm trying to cover, the disco era, the More Than a Feeling, what would you say? Is that a bit rock?
Rock,
yeah. And maybe, Can't Go Past Karen Carpenter, Close to You.
Yeah.
Beautiful song. Can I ask you guys?
Beautiful song from 1969.
Was it?
No, it's actually from 1970.
Okay. Borderline. Funky Town, was that 70s?
Yeah.
Oh, would have been 79.
Right. Yeah, there you go, Drum Machine.
Lips Incorporated.
Oh. Yeah, Lips Incorporated. Yeah, so I'm just trying to work out when the first drum machines were kind of introduced.
It's actually Lips Inc.
Lips Inc.
Yeah. And is that a play on
the word lip sync.
Oh, hello. Oh, you might be onto something here.
Lip sync.
I mean, did they have any more hits? Who were they?
It received significant airplay, not a big hit. Designer Jeans to follow up Funky Town.
Were they American, English, Europe? Where were they from? I have no idea.
I don't know
where they're from.
Being on the Casablanca label, I think it's from the US.
I think it's L-Y.
Oh, Casablanca. That means it could have been Bill O'Coin again because he was associated with Casablanca Records.
Yeah. Wasn't that Kiss as well?
Kiss and The Village People and Donna Summer.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Ooh, 1980.
80. Ooh, sorry, guys.
They probably wrote it then.
They wrote it in 79. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I just made a telephone call. Hello, lip sync.
active from 1979.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Can we have a supplementary one? One more each?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. Smoke on the Water.
1971.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's actually 1972.
72?
No, feel free to keep correcting.
There's a band we didn't even mention.
What a contradicting going on today, isn't it?
So Deep Purple, even the name, Deep Purple. I mean, cool sounding, Dave.
That's enough from you.
Shut up.
Dave.
How about, here's an obvious one, The Eagles, Hotel California.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to choose Horse With No Name by America.
I was going to choose that too.
But don't you guys think that nearly every America song had a 60s vibe? Like, I'll give you their three biggest hits, Horse With No Name,
yes.
Sister Golden Hair, and Ventura Highway.
Yeah.
They definitely had a 60s Crosby, Stills, and Nash feel.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
I always thought it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash when I first heard them.
I actually thought it was Neil Young.
Right, yeah.
Well, I thought Crosby, Neil Young was America. America was Neil Young.
Yeah.
Okay, Russ, you came up with the idea.
Yes, okay. Here it is, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah.
Queen.
Yeah.
I just feel like we could go forever, you know. Like, I'm just thinking, did you know that Psycho Killer was written in 1977?
Would that be because it was off the album Talking Heads 77?
Yeah.
I'll give you another one. Black Betty, Ram Jam. That was 79.
Yeah.
Now, that to me sounds like it's an 80s. Oh, 77.
Yeah.
77. That's got an 80s sound to it to me.
Did you know that Roxanne was 1978? I didn't.
1978 was a big year.
The 70s, didn't we love them? The time when you and your mates could go to the fish and chip shop, get 30 cents worth of chips, and feel really ill afterwards. Well, that's it for this episode. If you have any questions or just like to leave a comment, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram at Pulling the Music Apart. Our next episode's almost ready, so stay tuned for its release. Until then, keep listening to the music. And thanks for tuning in.